Thank you, Blessing and Jonga. Good evening, Zimbabwe. You are listening to Studio 7 from the Voice of America on Thursday, November 26th, 2015. Thank you for joining us live on Thanksgiving Day from Washington. This is Chris Gande.
And I'm Jonga Kandemiri.
Here are our top stories this evening.
Finance Minister Patrick Chinamasa unveils a $4 billion budget proposal projecting the country's economy will grow by 2.7% next year.
Wage expenditures will fall by 80% of the budget, are leaving little room for developing expenditures. Pursuant to redressing this, Cabinet resolved that consideration be given to some rationalization of the country's public service establishment.
But economic analysts say it's highly unlikely Zimbabwe's economy will grow next year as challenges including drought and lack of revenue continue to weigh down on Zimbabwe.
We need about $51 million to reach our caseload, which is a target of about 850,000 among the most vulnerable.
And a crucial African Union conference on ending child marriages kicked off in Zambia today, with victims from Harare sharing their stories with other child marriage survivors from across the continent.
This and much more coming up. Stay tuned.
Finance Minister Patrick Chinamasa today unveiled a $4 billion budget proposal against projected revenues of $3.8 billion, saying the deficit would be financed from domestic borrowings. He projected the economy will grow by 2.7% next year, as Ivan Chifera reports from Harare.
Nothing changed much in the budget proposal unveiled by the finance minister today. As in the previous financial year, more than 80% revenues collected by the government would still go towards funding public servants' salaries. Chinamasa told a skeptical parliament that a civil service rationalization program will be implemented to reduce the government's wage bill by $14 million monthly.
Wage expenditures will fall by 80% of the budget, are leaving little room for developing expenditures. Pursuant to redressing this, Cabinet resolved, and I quote, that consideration be given to some rationalization of the country's public service establishment in order to cut down the size of the wage bill.
Chinamasa proposed that the bulk of the $4 billion budget go towards funding the two education ministries at $810 million, while Home Affairs, Health and Defense were also among the top beneficiaries. He said the government will up its game in its effort to boost the economy, with more support going to agriculture, mining, tourism, and the manufacturing sectors, among others. The minister said vulnerable farmers would receive free inputs, while commercial farmers would get support from the banks. Cotton farmers were the major beneficiaries of the government support in the proposed budget.
Government is going to give free cotton inputs to cotton farmers for the next three seasons in order to encourage farmers to return to cotton production.
To further boost agriculture, Chinamasa said the 99-year leases would be securitized to make them tradable. He added that the controversial empowerment law would be further clarified before the end of the year as the government seeks to attract investment.
The minister will be announcing and gazetting before Christmas the frameworks, templates, and procedures for implementing the indigenization policy in a manner that both promotes investment and eliminates discretionary application of the law.
Chinamasa also told Parliament that the government will, in the new financial year, take over Zisco Steel's $200 million debt and retire all its workers next month to make it attractive to foreign investors. This all but confirms an earlier deal between Zisco Steel and ESA Africa Holdings has collapsed.
Accordingly, all contracts for Zisco employees will be terminated on a 3-month notice with effect from 1st of December this year. Government will therefore, through the Ministry of Industry and Commerce, be updating honorable members on progress in engaging a new investor.
He said the country's exports are expected to rise to $3.7 billion next year from $3.4 last year, while imports would decline from $6.3 billion last year to $6.2 billion next year. He said donors are expected to support the country to the tune of almost $180 million next year. Reporting for Studio 7 from Harare, this is Ivan Chifera.
The World Food Programme says it has revised slightly downwards the amount of money it's seeking to assist 850,000 of the 1.5 million Zimbabweans who desperately need food aid. But the UN agency says to date it has raised about half the amount that's required. This development comes after government and other aid agencies stepped up their assistance to the vulnerable. On the government side, Vice President Emmerson Mnangagwa is in charge of the food crisis. Zimbabwe did not produce enough food to feed its people due to the drought, but others blame Harare's agrarian reforms and poor planning for lack of reserves to help in times of need. WFP Communications Officer for Southern Africa, David Orr, tells Studio 7's Blessing Zulu that the situation in Zimbabwe remains desperate.
We estimate we need about $51 million to reach our caseload, which is a target of about 850,000 people. They are among the most vulnerable of the total number of people who are estimated to be food insecure in the country. That's 1.5 million total.
So of the 51 million, how much have you raised so far?
I believe we are approximately 50% resourced, which is certainly an improvement on the situation a few months ago. And we are obviously still appealing to donors to come forward and help us, because this is a lean season assistance program which is going to continue on into next year. The next harvest isn't until April.
Tell us briefly, what form of assistance are you giving to Zimbabweans? Is it food only?
We are giving a mixture of food, and where market conditions allow, we are distributing cash so that people can go out and themselves purchase the commodities they want. This has a number of advantages. It injects some cash into the local economy.
That was WFP Communications Officer for Southern Africa, David Orr, speaking with Studio 7's Blessing Zulu from Johannesburg, South Africa.
Meanwhile, Matabeleland South is said to be losing its livestock in huge numbers due to severe drought. That has also seen a growing number of school children dropping out of class. The region, which is in the drought-prone Region 5, is also experiencing very high, unprecedented temperatures that have seen pastures wilting fast. Prices of beef have gone down as villagers sell off their cattle and other livestock to avoid further losses.
Agronomist Mandla Nkomo says the cattle deaths will further reduce crop yields in the coming season as rural farmers depend on cattle for draft power.
A few weeks ago, you and I were talking about the whole El Nino situation, which is resulting in drier than normal conditions, and means that the rains this year are going to be late and are not going to be sufficient. It's not surprising. And what you are reading about numbers of 300 or so are the recorded numbers. The reports I'm getting is that the situation is worse.
So what do you make of the impact of these cattle deaths in the whole agricultural season that's coming up next year?
Let us remember that most of our farmers are based in the rural areas. They rely on their cattle for draft power. And when the rains do come, if they do come late, they're going to come into a situation where the cattle are already emaciated and weak.
We understand that beef prices have significantly gone down. What could be the reason?
A lot of your cattle farmers have looked at their stock holding, they've looked at their available grazing, and they are taking a business decision that you'd rather sell your animals now and get some value for them than actually let them die because there's not enough grass and water.
That was agronomist Mandla Nkomo. He spoke to Studio 7 on the line from Johannesburg, South Africa.
A crucial African Union conference on ending child marriage is kicked off in Zambia today, with victims from Zimbabwe sharing their stories with other child marriage survivors from across the continent. These include 31-year-old Faith Matare from Bindura, who says Zimbabwe should pull out all the stops to curb the scourge. Zimbabwe's Women Affairs Minister Nyasha Chikwinya is also attending. The summit, opened by Zambian leader Edgar Lungu, comes as the world marks 16 days against gender-based violence. Studio 7 reporter Ntungamili Nkomo reached Dewa Mavinga of Human Rights Watch, also attending the meeting, who tells us more on what transpired today.
It's quite positive and interesting, and the high-level representatives from a number of countries across Africa, including from Zimbabwe, the Minister for Women Affairs, Comrade Nyasha Chikwinya. So it's quite an exciting and interesting event, which has promised that we could find ways to end child marriage in Africa.
We know there is a number of Zimbabwean child marriage survivors attending this conference. Did they have a chance to share their stories?
Yes, and there are a number of sessions that are ongoing still. The conference is only ending at the end of the day tomorrow. So they are sharing their stories, and not only their stories, but particularly the harmful consequences of child marriage, how they have been robbed of their dreams, of their education, of their health rights, and why it is important in the interest of development and women's rights and girls' rights for governments to be serious and to take action to end child marriages in Africa.
What was the main message from this conference today from those who spoke?
The main message has been really that governments should take action, that a key first step is to set 18 as the minimum age for marriage. And so a number of countries are being encouraged, Zimbabwe included.
Dewa Mavinga of the Human Rights Watch on the line from Lusaka, Zambia, with VOA reporter Ntungamili Nkomo.
You're listening to Studio 7 from the Voice of America in Washington.
We are broadcasting on 909 meter wave and on the 4930, 5940 and 15460 shortwave frequencies.
On the internet, find us at www.studio7news.com.
You can also text us at 001-202-465-0318.
Coming up,
a close look at the 2016 national budget as presented today by Finance Minister Chinamasa.
But first, before we go to the budget, a look at regional and international news.
Tensions remained heated between Ankara and Moscow today following Turkey's shooting down of a Russian warplane near the Turkey-Syria border earlier in the week. In an interview with CNN, Turkey's President Recep Tayyip Erdogan said his country would not apologize for downing the jet.
Thousands of people gathered today at a university in Kenya to celebrate Mass with Pope Francis on a day declared a national public holiday in the East African country.
And the Boko Haram extremist group killed at least 15 people in an attack Thursday on a village in Niger's southern border area of Difam. Niger security sources said that militants arrived in the village of Gogoni on foot and opened fire indiscriminately on villagers, adding that government troops pursued them.
You are listening to Studio 7 from the Voice of America, coming to you from Washington.
As reported earlier, Finance Minister Patrick Chinamasa today unveiled a $4 billion budget proposal that will be adopted or rejected by Parliament after debate. Chinamasa gave the bulk of resources in the budget that already has a deficit due to expected low revenue collections to the combined ministries of education. For perspective, we turned to commentators Masimba Kuchera of the Center for Disability and Development and Prosper Chitambara of the Labor and Economic Development Research Institute of Zimbabwe, with Kuchera saying the budget is more of the same with nothing new to talk about.
The budget is just more of the same thing that we've seen in the past few years. And when we look at the framework underpinning the budget, it hasn't changed much. The budget remains highly consumption-oriented. And also when you consider some of the assumptions that the minister has made, for example, they are forecasting growth for next year to be at 3.2%. However, in my opinion, that's overly optimistic, especially when you consider that agriculture is not going to perform to its optimal level because of uncertainty with respect to rainfall. Also, the mining sector will also not perform to its optimal levels because of the low commodity prices on the global markets. The combination of underperformance of mining and agriculture will definitely affect the economic forecast for next year. So I don't agree with the forecast of 2022. I think the economy will probably grow. If it does grow, it will grow by around 1%.
Mr. Kuchera, your take on the 2016 budget?
My colleague here has already indicated it's clearly an economy that is not moving, because since the increase in government is led a $4 billion budget, sometimes 3.6 billion. So clearly we are not going anywhere very fast. It's also a sign that government has rather decided to actually resuscitate this economy. The more government looks outside itself to get an idea, the faster it will get this economy up and running. Unfortunately, also, I think government is suddenly putting its eye off the economic ball, and they seem to be politicking even worse than the situation we had in the existing government. It seems politics is taking center stage. Shinawa is saying this, Muchango is saying the other thing, and Joao is saying another as well. So you have a situation where the government, there is discordance and cognitive dissonance within the government itself, which is a serious hindrance to any economic development. Hopefully, the budget may be able to fix the economy if government resolves emphatically to move in one direction.
Mr. Chitambara, the minister also indicated that $3.2 billion will go towards employment costs against a budget of $4 billion. May you explain what this means?
What this actually means is that the bulk of the revenues for next year will be taken up by employment costs, which means the government will be left with a very, very small proportion of revenues to plow into capital expenditures and other long-term projects.
That was Prosper Chitambara of the Labor and Economic Development Research Institute of Zimbabwe. You also heard from Masimba Kuchera of the Center for Disability and Development.
Climate change is posing a serious threat to food security in Zimbabwe, with the country now experiencing regular droughts owing to increased temperatures and reduced rainfall over the years. But the cash-strapped government says it's doing something about trying to mitigate the effects of climate change, as Ivan Chifera reports from Harare.
According to the Environment, Water and Climate Ministry, the country's annual mean surface temperature has warmed by 0.4 degrees Celsius from 1900 to 2000. The country is now experiencing more hot and fewer cold days as a result of climate change and variability, while the timing and amount of rain received are becoming uncertain, droughts are more regular, food shortages are a perennial feature, resulting in a high prevalence of undernourishment, estimated at 30-54% between 2006 and 2012. The trend is worrying not only for the government, but for the ordinary people as well. Recently, the government set up a climate change management department in the Environment Ministry to deal with the climate change issues in the country. Principal climate change researcher in the climate change department, Elisha Moyo, says the department is already implementing a national climate change response strategy launched a fortnight ago. The strategy says will guide the integration of climate change issues into national development and addressing its impact on communities. Moyo says what is pleasing is that Zimbabweans are aware of climate change and its effects, but there is need for more public awareness among communities.
There is new knowledge that is coming. There is need maybe for more awareness. There is need for more efforts in educating the communities, but also learning from what they are doing. Most of them, they have their indigenous knowledge systems. They have their knowledge. They've been adapting, you know.
Act 1. He adds the department is already implementing adaptation strategies such as raising funds for irrigation-supported agriculture.
There have been issues of adaptation, how we can access means of implementation for adaptation, that is the finance, that is the technologies. So these are the issues largely that we have been advocating to say, how can we make sure that we access some of the credit lines, some of the loans, some of the grants that are issued by different finance mechanisms.
The government is preparing to go to the crucial Paris Climate Change Conference, COP21, but Permanent Secretary Prince Mpazwiriwo of the Environment, Water and Climate Ministry says Zimbabwe's position will be enunciated by President Robert Mugabe as the chair of the African Union at the meeting. This, he said, follows a meeting convened by the United Nations Economic Commission for Africa, UNECA, last week in Victoria Falls, bringing together African governments and experts to come up with a united position ahead of COP21.
Last week, Thursday and Friday, Zimbabwe had a successful conference, stakeholder conference, where we were looking at these issues and also where we launched our climate change response strategy. But prior to that, we had also had the 5th African Climate Development in Africa, which was held in Victoria Falls, and this was coordinated by UNECA. At that conference, outcome of it is going to be delivered, which is the African position, by the African chair, who also happens to be our head of state. So let us wait and get it from him, who carries the mandate to pronounce the AUN national position.
City resident Henry Munangatire welcomes the government's attempts to mitigate climate change effects, but adds more action is required in the worst-affected communities.
What we're not seeing enough of on the ground is actual enforcement of practical things that are affecting climate change in Zimbabwe. One, of course, is land use. Land use is very important because if we don't farm correctly, what ends up happening is that we weaken our soils. If our soils are weakened, we weaken our vegetation, and that causes siltation in our rivers, and then water and other issues become a problem. Also, the issue of tree cutting is another very small issue which I think the government can do a lot more to deal with.
Another resident, James Peary, says individuals and companies must complement government efforts to reduce the emission of greenhouse gases, which are largely responsible for climate change.
It is affecting us now. As we speak, it is, you know, it is November, mid-November, and we haven't received the rains yet. It is because of that phenomenon.
Munangatire and Peary say they hope Zimbabwe will learn a lot about managing climate change at the forthcoming Paris Climate Change Conference, COP21.
Number one, it's a very good stage for Zimbabwe to showcase the work it's doing and also the vision it has for climate change. Obviously, there are issues like the ongoing debate that industrialized nations should pay for the damage they have done to the environment through industrialization, since they were the major beneficiaries. However, my personal position and what I think we should think about is what can we do on our own.
Moyo says Harare is ready for COP21 and is optimistic a legally binding climate agreement aimed at reducing global warming by below 2% degrees Celsius would be reached, with the most developed countries that are largely responsible for polluting the environment committing more resources towards mitigating the effects of climate change. But Pangana Istole of the Zimbabwe Energy Council says the intersectoral consultations on the Zimbabwe's position on the Paris meeting were minimal.
We want to see the Chamber of Mines participating in those discussions. We want to see the energy sector participating in those discussions in a big way. If you look what is contributing much of this impact, it's the energy sector that is contributing through thermal power stations. And Zimbabwe has got thermal power stations, and it's also talking of actually increasing its thermal power stations at the expense of renewables.
He said discussions about Paris have been limited to environment and agricultural sectors alone, yet many sectors that contribute towards global warming could have made meaningful contributions. According to Zimbabwe's intended nationally determined contributions, INDCs, that were presented last month to United Nations Framework Convention on Climate Change by the Environment, Water and Climate Change Minister Opamu Chinguri, the country is seeking to contribute to an ambitious goal of limiting temperature rise to below 1.5 degrees Celsius. INDCs are climate change mitigation actions, strategies or policies that result in the reductions of emissions of greenhouse gases and the consequent slowing down of global warming. Muchinguri said Zimbabwe is looking at expanding and promoting the use of renewable and cleaner energy technologies. Reporting for Studio 7 from Harare, this is Ivan Chifera.
In our sports news segment, Zifa presidential candidate Trevor Carlos-Jewell says he's contesting the hot seat in order to revive soccer in Zimbabwe, where the local soccer board is saddled with a $6 million crippling debt. The former Zifa chairman, who is battling it out with businessman Philip Chiangwa, former Warriors player James Takavada, and Dynamo Secretary General Leslie Gwindi, says he wants to engage all stakeholders in order to revive the spirit of the dream team that was coached by the late Reinhard Fabisch. 58 councillors who constitute an electoral college and have the mandate to choose ousted Zifa President Cuthbert Dube's successor are expected to elect a new president next month. Carlos Jewell speaks to Studio 7's Gibbs Dube about his plans to revive Zimbabwean soccer.
My plan is to carry on from where I left off so many years ago and galvanize the support of the people again. I want to take the dream team to reality. That is my objective. We're a God-loving nation, and I think it's important that we have that in our football. We need to look at this as from a collective point of view, where all the people come together. The reasons we had success when I was there previously was because we were able to bring people in from everywhere and who bought into this dream and made the dream theirs. You know, unless you bring people together, you can't achieve this objective. Football is a team sport. I'm looking at creating revenue streams and wealth in football that will bring great success for us all.
Zifa has got a very huge debt, Mr. Jewell. What do you think you are going to do if you are elected to actually settle that kind of debt?
We need to do a SWOT analysis. You know, we need to go in and analyze and look at the weaknesses and the strengths and the opportunities, etc. And understand just what is this debt? Is it a real debt? And then we have to engage with the people and negotiate a repayment structure over a period of time, a percentage in the dollar that we can look at paying. We're going to have to engage with government to make sure that we have support from them. But clearly what we're looking at is a methodology that would rebrand the Football Association, bring sponsorship, bring investment into football.
That was Zifa presidential candidate Trevor Carlos-Jewell speaking with Studio 7 from Johannesburg, South Africa. Meanwhile, Chicken Inn chairman Lifa Ngcube says his club, which won the local soccer league last weekend, will convene a meeting tomorrow to discuss modalities of participating in the African Champions League amid fears of a tight budget.
Stay tuned for Studio 7 Live Talk at 8:30 p.m. when our hosts on the Women's Forum will discuss with experts and you, the listeners, about the 16 days of activism against gender-based violence.
And now to recap today's top stories.
Finance Minister Patrick Chinamasa unveils a $4 billion budget proposal projecting the country's economy will grow by 2.7% next year.
But economic analysts say it is highly unlikely Zimbabwe's economy will grow next year as challenges including drought and lack of revenues continue to weigh down on Zimbabwe.
And a crucial African Union conference on ending child marriage is kicked off in Zambia today.
That's our broadcast this evening. Now stand by for Studio 7 in Ndebele. This is Jonga Kandemiri.
And I'm Chris Gande, wishing you a pleasant evening and a very happy Thanksgiving.